Shortwave, a PBS NewsHour podcast on foreign events that have an impact close to home. I'm NewsHour foreign affairs and defense reporter-producer PJ Tobia. Every single day, millions of Americans use products or eat foods produced by slave labor. Rare metals from Africa in our cell phones, fish from Asia, fruit harvested right here in the USA can all potentially have connections to slavery. The UN says that 21 million people are currently victims of slavery worldwide. It's surprising how much of that labor ends up in the US. I'm not talking 6 degrees of separation. I'm talking coltan, an ore found in practically every cell phone mined by child slaves in Congo. I'm talking fish being sold in American supermarkets caught by men who were kept in cages.
They really have terrible lives. They work 22 hours a day. They can go for weeks at a time without being compensated in any way. And when they are compensated, it can be just noodles or something.
That's Martha Mendoza, a reporter at the Associated Press. She and an investigative team from AP uncovered a fishing operation in Indonesia that relied almost entirely on slave labor.
They're out on trawlers at sea, but when they come into shore to offload the seafood, the ones who are considered a flight risk are locked up in a cage.
Her colleagues were looking into labor abuses in Southeast Asia, and their investigation brought them to a tiny island in Indonesia where they made a shocking discovery.
They saw that there was a cage, that men were being caged.
The men were Burmese migrant workers, lured to the island and trapped there. Their work is brutal.
They throw out nets, great big nets, and they haul in these huge, heavy nets, and then they move the seafood into these freezers on their boats. So it's largely a net catch of grouper, snapper, squid, this type of seafood.
These men literally fish themselves to death.
They get very, very sick. They die. They're killed. They used to throw their bodies overboard, but then the company on shore said they needed to account for everybody who went out on a boat and when they came in. So then the slaves said that their dead compatriots' bodies would be put into the freezers alongside the fish until they came into shore.
The village on the island is called Benjina. There's a graveyard. Buried in it are the bodies of 64 slaves.
My colleagues counted them, and the grave markers have fake names on them and fake identification.
The company that owns these men sells the fish that the slaves catch to processing plants in Thailand. The slave-caught seafood goes into the factories as fish. It comes out as products that end up in many, many U.S. grocery stores and fine restaurants, even possibly your refrigerator. Mendoza used GPS information to track the shipments across the oceans, and then she used customs records to tie the shipments to U.S. companies.
Some of those factories are directly shipping to the United States, and on those U.S. customs records, you can even see what brands are being put onto certain items. So I could see IAMS, Fancy Feast, Meow Mix, cat food, for example.
But it's not just pet food. Mendoza says calamari, frozen snapper, even the imitation crab in your California roll can come from fish caught by slaves. And all this stuff is for sale at a store near you.
We were able to tie this seafood to the largest retailers in the United States, to Walmart and to the largest food distributor, Sysco, and to other supermarkets, Albertsons, Safeway, Kroger's, and others.
Of course, Mendoza's colleagues in Asia confronted the owners of the fishing company, but they wouldn't talk. Mendoza says that overall, the response from American industries in this supply chain has been remarkable. They've all issued statements condemning the use of slave labor, and she says they all want to do something to put a stop to this, one way or the other.
Some said they want to work with companies that are engaging in forced labor because they feel like they have some leverage over them if they have financial ties to them.
In response to Mendoza's story, Indonesian officials visited the island of Benjina in early April. They freed 320 slaves, mostly Burmese men, and offered them shelter and immigration help. This story had a happy ending. But there are still over 20 million victims of forced labor out there. I wondered, just how widespread is this? I mean, what else have I been eating that was harvested by slaves? How likely is it that I use products every day that may have been made in part by slaves?
It's very likely. It's very likely.
That's Maurice Middleberg, the executive director of Free the Slaves, an NGO in Washington.
That device you're holding in your hand.
Mm-hmm. This is my Android cell phone.
Your Android cell phone, has a mineral in it called coltan, for example, which is used in the manufacture of all of these kinds of devices. And that is mined. And I've been to those mines. That's mined in eastern Congo. And that's exactly where slavery exists. So it I'm not trying to make you feel bad, PJ, but but it is possible that there is slave-produced coltan in your product.
Well, thanks, Maurice. I do, in fact, now feel bad.
Whether it could be in the cocoa that you drink, it could be in the textiles you're wearing, it could be in the phone you're carrying.
When I think of slavery, I think of Roots, I think of 12 Years a Slave, I think Middle Passage, plantations, men in chains, women subject to sexual violence. Describe to me what the picture of modern slavery really looks like. What should I be thinking of?
So the fundamental purpose of slavery, which is to exploit another human being for economic gain, that has not changed, but it manifests in different ways. So the way that it manifests now is, of course, in part sexual slavery, holding typically women and girls, but not exclusively women and girls, in captivity for purposes of sexual exploitation. But actually, that constitutes globally probably about a fifth of all slavery. About 70 to 80% of slavery is actually labor slavery, where people are being held captive on farms, in mines, in factories, on boats, for the purposes of exploiting their labor and being held against their will at these workplaces so that others can profit from their labor. They can't leave, and the profits are all go to the slaveholder, to the owner of whatever's the economic enterprise.
How do people fall into this situation?
So a typical scenario would be something like this. A poor family finds itself in economic crisis, and they borrow money from the loan shark, and they don't have the cash to pay it back. And the loan shark says, well, that's okay. I own a farm or a mine or a boat. Come work it off. And at the end of the first day, the owner of the farm says, well, you did work. However, you used my tools, and I gave you a bowl of rice. That gets added to your debt, which is at a 60% rate of interest to begin with. And so the debt never, ever, ever gets paid off. And the person is held in bondage virtually forever.
Even worse, if worse is even possible here, the debt can get passed down to the slave's children, who are now born into slavery. It becomes the only life they ever know. Middleburg tells the story of visiting a village in India. Actually, he was hiding in the forest outside a village in India because the slaves in the village were terrified of being seen with him.
What they said to us was, if the landlord or his agent see us talking to you, we'll be beaten. And one of the men who was sort of serving as a spokesman for the village said to me, I was born a slave. My father was a slave. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be a slave anymore, and I don't want my children to be slaves. Or it can be in the case of labor migration, where somebody, and this happens in our Nepal program, where somebody comes into a village and says, I have a great job for people. It could be on the Malaysian fishing vessels or the Thai fishing vessels or the electronics industry or in the Gulf states. If you'll just get on the truck and let me hold your passport until we get there, you'll be able to have this wonderful job and you'll send money home to your family. But of course, this is a trap, it's a trick, it's a ruse. And once they're on the truck and they've surrendered their identity papers, then they're really at the mercy of the trafficker.
Women and girls especially can fall victim to slavery when their families trade them as a repayment of a debt. Middleburg says forced marriage is also a form of slavery. Where is this happening?
This exists in every country. There is no country that is immune, including our own.
But ground zero is Asia.
So the real epicenter of modern-day slavery is South Asia. India, Nepal, Bangladesh, Pakistan, and then sub-Saharan Africa is the other major arena for modern-day slavery.
So what to do about modern slavery? Well, according to Middleburg, a lot more than we're doing now.
There's an International Labor Organization study that says that the profits from modern-day slavery are $150 billion a year. This is a huge criminal enterprise. And there's another study which looked at, well, how much is being given to fight this crime? And from all of the industrialized, the OECD countries. And the figure was $124 million. So we're fighting a raging elephant with a pop gun.
Big picture, Middleburg wants more aggressive action from governments and world bodies. But regular folks like you and me can play a role too.
Nobody wants this. Nobody wants to drink a cup of cocoa that's been made by a child slave. Right? That's not what people want. But they also have to be conscious of placing that demand on the companies they buy from.
You can learn lots more about modern slavery at our website, newshour.org, including that report from the International Labor Organization that Maurice Middleburg mentioned. That's it for the very first episode of Shortwave. Thanks for listening. Shortwave is a production of PBS NewsHour, Sarah Just, executive producer. Justin Kenny is NewsHour's senior producer for foreign affairs and defense. Travis Dobb is creative director. Vanessa Dennis created the graphics for Shortwave. The theme music was composed by Jeremy Gibson. Sound patterns by Satuni Men. Jenny Martyr edits Shortwave's online content. Special thanks for editorial oversight and inspiration to Hari Srinivasan. I'm your host and producer, PJ Tobia. I hope you'll join us next time for Shortwave.